You're listening to the Brown Trout and Bridge Beers podcast.
There it is. Decent.
Hey guys, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Brown Trout and Bridge Beers. I'd like to welcome everybody because this is our first in-person podcast.
In a while.
In a very long time.
Yeah, it's good.
You know, we get to use the board again. We get to sit in front of mics. I get to look at people instead of looking at my computer screen like I do all day. And I appreciate that. So we are luckily down on the Rush River right now. Just got done with a little fishing. And, you know, Matt's here.
Hello.
And we have our new friend Mark here with us to talk a little bit about what they're doing down at the Rush River and give us a little bit of information on what you can look forward to on coming down, doing some events, doing some classes, and maybe you need to talk your boss or directors into bringing more of a corporate retreat or a company retreat out to your property. So, Mark, why don't you do a little intro of who you are, what you are, and why are we here today?
Cool. Well, thanks for having me. You know, we envisioned our school, Margo and Lola, a number of years back, my wife and I, to recognize that there's a lot of people like us that are interested in adventure-based experiences. And insofar as those adventure-based experiences go, they widely range, but we figured we'd stick with something we know. And being that I've been a long-term fly fisher person for well over 50 years, we kind of have a sense for that. Mm-hmm. My wife has got a good deal of experience in kind of high touch experiences. And so we thought we would merge those two thoughts. And, you know, it's interesting when you step out of kind of the arena of fly fishing and try to think about it from a business point of view, it takes on a whole different perspective. And so we were initially mindful of the fact that whatever we did had to involve kind of a high touch sort of boutique experience. We weren't really interested as the school goes to being big. We just wanted to be relevant. And of course we wanted to be a place where people could go and try stuff. So that was kind of the early genesis of Margo and Lola. And as we thought about how we would do that and go about it, we were fortunate to find some really excellent property here on the Rush River, not too far down the road from Vino in the Valley for those listeners who know this area. And so we seized the moment, as they say, and we bought a piece of property that was probably a year or two beyond what our ideas were for the business, but we did that. And of course, we did it in the middle of COVID, which kind of sucked insofar as the availability of people to work on things like contractors and building materials and what have you. But surprisingly, we got through all of that. And that's where we built this building that you guys are sitting in today. And
it's a very nice building.
Yeah, thank you. We did that. And we also, again, put it on some pretty awesome property that has got a fair amount of good fishing and good access to the river from a beginner standpoint.
And I can say firsthand that speaking of good stretches of river, based on the weather conditions we've had today, which are bluebird skies, north winds,
lots of wind,
upwards of the 20s, and not super warm, we're still able to pull out some pretty chunky fish from nymph rigs to streamers. I saw a couple of risers. I mean, it's an absolutely beautiful stretch of river that if you've ever been down here, you may have touched the water before, but this place gives you really good access with great walking trails and just a beautiful spot to hang out and be able to go check out the river at your leisure.
Yeah. And you're offering classes, right, Mark?
Yeah, that's right. So the basic idea has always been around being more inviting for beginners. Mm-hmm. And if you think about that, there's a lot of people never even been in a river before. So we had to kind of step back ourselves and ask ourselves, what would that mean? And what would that experience look like? So our focus is on first time fly fisher people, men and women alike, especially towards the female demographic, because that's a largely untapped opportunity as far as the industry goes. And so little things like having a shower facility and having lockers and having heated floors and having a comfortable area to be in beat a lot of the other options that beginners had to consider or could consider. So we have beginner classes. We have two classes format-wise. We have private classes and public classes. And to make all of that happen, we've got some really awesome instructors that have kind of their head and heart connected to giving good instruction to beginners, especially ones that, again, have never touched a rod, never been in the water before,
right.
Haven't even seen a fish other than maybe in a picture. So, yeah, we've been focusing on that as our initial offering. And then as Grant alluded to earlier, we're also very mindful of that kind of corporate audience that has essentially tapped out on the axe throwing or the otherwise other options for small group dynamics, getting together for offsite retreats or team building mm-hmm. as they go. And so we offer a venue for that. So those are our kind of two primary our ideas.
And with, you had mentioned you have a group of instructors here on location that will come out and work with groups. Who do you have for instructors that are working, specifically with your team here?
Yeah. Thank you for that question. We've got a good roster of instructors comprised of four women, four men. I say that because we have a mixed audience in terms of who wants to show up and learn, and not everybody necessarily wants to be instructed by a particular individual, so we give them choices. I'll put out a couple of different names for the audience that might be in the industry. We've got Corey Berrigan, who's a accomplished fly fishing woman, Marlene Huston, who is a world-class instructor. We've got Abigail Kreider. Those are just some of the three women that we've got examples of instructors around. We've got other gentlemen such as myself. So I'm one of the instructors. We have Jeff Donegan, who's an Alaskan fisherman, has been doing that for quite a while and also fished the Driftless for a considerable period of his life. And then Josh and I'm drawing a blank now on the other gentleman for life of me. But point of it is we had a mix of instructors, and we hope that those match well with the different kinds of classes that we have. So far, we've got a number of classes that are already enrolled and classes that we've conducted. And it's interesting that on occasion we see a mix and match is kind of a requirement. So we think we're uncommon insofar as offering different instructor kind of options. It's just not a one size fits all.
Right.
And so that's one of the ways that we distinguish ourselves.
So if somebody was to sign up for a beginner fly fishing class, do they pick the individual instructor they would like to learn from, or is that, determined by you guys?
Yeah, it's really up to the student. So right. Students get a choice, and then based on their choice or no choice, they then enroll in a class. And then as we talked earlier, the class is comprised of a very structured approach. So we have a kind of an outcomes focus towards our classes. We want to be relevant to our students coming in, and we want to match them with instructors that would meet those requirements. But in either case, we focus on what is the interest of the student. So when we get started, we typically have a 90-day or 90-minute program. And that program is very much a classroom setting. So if you in the audience can imagine a classroom environment with a audiovisual capability, we go through a 90-minute kind of a combination of hands-on and theory just to ground the students in what they're going to experience. And then we step outside and we spend about 30 minutes kind of giving the general physics of a fly rod, which end to hold.
Yep.
And learning how to cast a fly rod in order to get the basics kind of understood. And then once everybody's good and ready, we step into the water. And at that point, we spend upwards to 3 hours going through a really hands-on kind of accumulation of the first two pieces. We spend time in the water going through a variety of stations, as we call them. So again, for your audience to maybe envision, particularly beginners, we have kind of a golf course arrangement of sorts where we have 12 different stations or 12 different holes. And we liken those to the different things that they've been taught prior so that they can associate those theoretical things to the practical things and ideally catching some fish as we did today.
Yeah. And when we got here this morning, Mark kind of ran us through, you know, a typical day, you know, obviously a little, you know, abbreviated, but like we had talked earlier, the fact that what you learn in the classroom in the beginning of your time here, within an hour, you're applying that knowledge you just got, you know, onto the river, which is, you know, as far as I'm concerned, extremely helpful.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely completely different than, again, not knocking any of the, like, you know, courses or learnings that you can do in the Twin Cities. But if you come out here, which it's an hour, I live in Blaine, it's an hour and 23 minutes from my doorstep. You can come out here and immediately put those learnings on the river instead of going home, maybe waiting a couple of days, mm-hmm. then meeting up with the group and going out, right. You know, going on the water. Whereas you're not forgetting, you're not going home and doing your home stuff and doing dinner and forgetting most of it. You're on site and learning and putting it directly into use, which is not anything I've seen, at least in our area, you know, regards to fly fishing.
That's a great way to learn.
Yeah. And I think that was the basis for why we decided to do what we did, is that there's a kind of a practical application of learning that was missing, not just in the general area, but I think the industry at large. There's a lot of parts and pieces, Grant, as you mentioned, that could come together, but they're not always in the same sort of time frame. And that tends to pace people's interests and also their ability to learn. So we thought that we would put it all together. And so that's back to the kind of first question around what is it we do, is we offer that kind of integrated class to give a full experience. And then the takeaway is you like it or you don't. And if you do, we have other things that we could offer, or then we can certainly encourage going other places, Grant, as you mentioned, to take advantage of the rest of the industry, right? Because there's a lot of resources out there. But we think we fill a pretty interesting niche, and that is being a really, really good place to start out as a beginner. Although we've had certain people that have had come through our classes that have had a chance to try it before, but may have forgotten certain pieces, or maybe never knew at one point what those were.
Right.
And so we get a chance to kind of integrate all that back and give them more of a perspective on it. It's surprising to me how much is involved, but it's more surprising to see how much can be absorbed by a student, a first-time student, in a period of 5 hours or even less.
Mm-hmm. Is that typical length of time for a class is 5 hours, roughly?
Yeah, you know, we've decided earlier on that we were going to be comprehensive. And so we discussed, we being the instructors that I referred to earlier, we decided that we wanted to be kind of a complete picture. Mm-hmm. And as we broke it down to its kind of basic elements, it was pretty hard to escape anything less than 5 hours.
Right.
Whether it's 4 hours or 6 hours, we've had students that decide that they want to call it a day shorter. And others that want to stay longer, and we're pretty flexible around that. But
right.
We think that's a good recipe for now, and we're going to stick with that.
Good. And you guys, like, so there's no confusion. You're not really a guide service. You're more of an instructor-based school
type. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, there are plenty of awesome guides out there. And the way I would distinguish it is that a guide knows where to go. And oftentimes, and I've used plenty of guides myself, oftentimes can offer some tips and some learning to being a better fisher person. But we start more basic than that.
Right.
We start at the level of what is a reel and what is a rod, and what is a knot, and what kind of fish are out there, and what is the idea of entomology, and some really, really low level kinds of things mm-hmm. that guides may assume or may require in order for you to take advantage of a guide. So I think somewhere between retail and a guide is where our school fits. And I'm intrigued by your question because I hadn't really thought about it that way until now. But I think that we fill that void that kind of actualizes or enables the industry from a beginner standpoint.
Right.
I shared with you guys both while we were fishing and earlier that we're often found in a position of giving advice after the fact as to what kind of equipment should you use and where can I buy it? And so it's interesting to think about that, which kind of completes the cycle around how we can support our local retail shops, which we're excited to do that. And then also to your question around, pushing our beginners now, maybe intermediaries to other places like guides, you know, in the area or outside right. of the area as well.
Good.
Yeah.
And I think a big piece of that, like we've talked about a few times, is you're not directly tied to a specific shop.
Right.
It's, you know, if somebody needs something, you can push them to maybe
whichever one's close.
Whichever one's closer right. to where they live, yeah. or maybe this shop has what they're looking for. Because I mean there's plenty of shops in the area that all carry kind of different, mm-hmm. different products. And you're able to just kind of pass that around instead of saying, I'm strictly this shop or I'm strictly this brand.
Right.
Where you guys kind of are able at this point to spread yourselves out, which is, I think, good for beginning fly fishermen. Cause you're like, oh, if I go there, I'm only going to get pushed this way. No, you're going to push them in whatever best suited to their needs at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate you bringing that point up because we, again, don't want to be in the retail business and we're not interested in guiding. We feel a void between the two and there are plenty of good shops around town that, at least from my experience, offer that variety grant, as you mentioned. And those are the experts in what is hot or not as far as equipment goes. I have bias, and, as we all do.
We all course, do, yep.
Yeah. But to the degree that you know, we're catering to a very open mind, kind of an open canvas audience,
right?
And want to give them the benefit of the expertise where it lies.
That's great. So I know we kind of touched on it a little bit, but I kind of want to circle back to, okay, I've never fly fished before. I'm signing up for a class. What does my day timeline look like once I arrive on ground?
Yeah. Good question.
What time do they have to be here?
Yeah. Soon.
Depends on the season, right? Because this morning I would have not gotten here any earlier than 10 o'clock.
No, it's kind of breezy.
Yeah. Well, in general, then let's talk about the generalities. So you talked about the fact that we've got 5 hour programs. Typically, if you look at our reservation system and our our website, you'll see that those programs start at 8 o'clock and 1 o'clock. And so what we like to think is weather permitting and otherwise, our guests would show up a little beforehand to get acquainted with the facility that we have. Again, if you can imagine, or maybe you've looked on our website, we have a fairly comfortable area to get kind of situated, get your stuff hung up, get some coffee or sandwiches, it may. And then if you're in a private class, of course, you're with your people. And if you're in a public class, you might be joined by others. But we have a classroom setting, and we like to make some just general introductions. We like to get a sense for what it is that you're interested in learning today besides the art of fly fishing. We have made it a promise to our guests that we are here to uncomplicate that experience. So we talk in very plain language. We try not to use a lot of clever words or fly fishing lingo that three of us might have on the river. Some of it's appropriate, some of it's inappropriate, but we like to keep it to the understandable level. And as I mentioned earlier, we go through a very structured format. We have a class curriculum that we have developed with eight instructors in mind, having about 300 years of a total experience. So we think we have a pretty good idea of what is the basics of fly fishing. And we review that, and we go through a very hands-on kind of approach, whether it be knot tying or touching of a fly or a touching of a net or holding up a wader, you know, some really simple things, pointing out what end of the rod to hold, as I kind of jokingly said earlier. But we go through some very simple things to get the students grounded. And then once we're pretty clear on all of that, we talk also about safety. I should point that out because it is an important aspect to fly fishing. There's some kind of basic elements of that. There's the person's safety, the fisherman's safety, which includes things of like wading across the river appropriately. There's casting. We don't want to get anybody injured in the process of that. There's also fish safety. And so to the degree that we have a program touching on that as well, and then we're ready to step outside. And to your question, oftentimes people don't have any experience in putting on waders. And so, again, in a real simple terms, we get some waders on, we get some boots on, we get everybody situated and comfortable. And I'm sometimes asked whether or not, you know, you look good in waders. The answer is probably not.
Nobody does.
No, nobody usually does. But
Do you guys, not to interrupt, but do you guys provide waders, or is that something people need to bring on their own?
Great question. So our motto, besides uncomplicating things, is to effectively say that you bring you. So our business, our pricing is inclusive of everything except the license and a trout stamp.
Okay.
And provided you bring those, and if you don't, then we can get those for you. That's those are the rules. Then we provide everything. And in advance of the registration for the class, we check on wader sizes. Not everybody's built the same way. And so we have a wide variety of waders and sizes and so forth to fit all of our students. And if we don't, then we have to run out and go get some real fast.
Well, and I will say this.
Mark will take care of you.
Yeah. If you're on your way here and you're like, oh no, I forgot my license. You've got a few options if you left the cities and you're on your way here. You can stop at Fleet Farm in the Hudson area, or you can go to Lund's Fly Shop in River Falls. They also sell license. I was there this morning, and some old timer got it. He was trying to get his third turkey tag. And Brian's like, no, we don't sell them till 10. He's like, no, I'm pretty sure you can sell them at 9 a.m. Actually, after midnight. And Brian's like, no. So needless to say, if you got my license, you've got a couple options to hit on your way down here.
And everybody's got a smartphone now.
And so you can do it from your smartphone. Yeah. Well, go get a Go Wild card from Wisconsin, because that's the best way to hold the license.
Amen. Yeah. And the good news is we have a printer, and we have this thing called the internet.
Perfect.
We are able to do last minute licenses. And as I recall, and maybe you guys can confer or not, but I think there's a paper version that you need in Wisconsin as well as a digital version. But we have those capabilities here. And so we hope that people pay attention to getting their licenses in advance.
Yep.
But once that's the case, then we're off to the river. And, you know, it's at that point, a matter of going through our various stations that we have in the river. I mentioned each one of these stations, think of a golf course. For those of you who play golf, they set up a little differently. They're a little bit different of an experience, but they all relate back to this earlier class kind of setting so that we can tie those pieces together and to help the student understand why they're doing things
right
as much as what they're doing. And I think that's where, again, the notion of where we fit between retail and professional guides is somewhat of an open area for us to address.
Yeah. I mean, like we talk, you spend the morning learning about, or after early afternoon, the first part of your class, learning what a riffle is. And then an hour later, you're standing in a riffle and, you know, it just clicks in your head like, okay, this is what a riffle is. I'm standing in one right now.
Yep.
I'm fishing in there and I'm catching fish.
Right.
And, you know, I learned about this an hour ago.
And a riffle is not to be confused with like some other things that we could imagine that they would be, but you're right.
Yeah.
And so some of that lingo that is important, particularly when it comes to describing how the river's behaving, mm-hmm. right, or how a fish is behaving, or some of the equipment that we're using becomes important. And so I think, yeah, like with any other sort of skill, you get to understand what those shorthands are for that. So,
yeah. Exactly.
Yep.
I would like to point this out. What I found about today, you know, fishing with Mark, which I felt is very interesting, is Matt and I have fished, no joke, this stretch of river a lot, you know, over the last 7 or 8 years. But your intimacy with this point of water was pointing out places where I would have never stopped to fish before. Mm-hmm. And we were stopping to fish and we were pulling fish out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's what I'd like to say to our listeners is, even if you've been fishing for a few years and you think you've got the game dialed, coming down here and getting in class with you and learning these different small pieces of water that you can find on the rush, I learned a lot today that mm-hmm. I had never, like I said, I would have never stopped and fished a lot of those spots that we were pulling fish out today. Mm-hmm. Before we walked up and I pulled that bigger fish out today, in my brain I said, I've never pulled a fish out of there before, ever, never once. I was like, I would have walked right past it. And you're like, nope, go try that out. And Matt, you pulled a couple out of a streamer and I pulled that nice one out of a nymph. I'm like, without Mark, we would just walked right past it. So if you think you've got it nailed, this is still a place you can come and learn more. Yeah.
Sometimes it helps to relearn the basics,
yeah,
you know, because you get stuck in a rut of, you know, like, especially a lot of the streamer guys. I mean, streamer fishermen are really good at what they do, but they're not very good at much anything else. Yeah. You know, you give a streamer guy, you give a streamer guy a nymph rig and you're like, go catch some fish. And, you know, they all of a sudden they're stripping back, you know, a couple of pheasant tail nymphs. But no, I mean, and we all learn stuff and certain ways of fishing, and then we evolve or move on, or, you know, move into, you know, different types of fly fishing, because there are so many different ways that you can do this sport, but, you forget some of the basics of, like, you know, okay, here's how you roll cast, and, you know, here's why, and here's, you know, where fish live in a riffle, and here's where, you know, fish live in the tail out of a pool.
Right. Yep.
You know, it's sometimes good, I feel, to like relearn some of the basics, and something like this is a good place to do it.
Yeah. Cause like you said, you skip over mm-hmm. those basic fish areas.
Yeah.
Cause you're just thinking like,
I know what a Lunker structure is. And that's like all you're focusing on. But yeah. in reality, they're in those, what you would consider.
They're all over the place.
They're all over. Yeah. And they're in those like basic areas that you don't even think about anymore, or places that I've passed over 100 times because the first two times I fished it, I never caught a fish out of.
Well, yeah. And we are all guilty as experienced fisher persons of doing that, no doubt. And I think it took me a while to get to that point where, as you say, Grant, fish are everywhere. I think mathematically, and somebody in your audience is going to check my work here, I'm sure, but I think mathematically there's on average 2 fish per foot in the Rush River, more or less. And that's a pretty dense number, or in other words, the positive is that's a lot of fish, right?
Yeah.
And so I think back to the broader point is, we like to make sure that we convey the basics. We get an understanding of that so that people increase their chances. Mm-hmm. And it is a thrill for all of our instructors to get people on fish. I used to think that catching a fish was probably at the peak of what is referred to as Maslow's triangle. And, you know, getting people on a fish beats that for me. And so we're trying to make it a point to do that and leave no stone unturned, as they say. But the river, we are blessed to have a great river that has got plenty of fish in it. But moreover, I think if, and I'll turn it back to the two of you, I think if you can learn the basics on a river like the Rush River or the Kinney or other like rivers in the Driftless area, then you could probably fish just about any river in the world.
I'd agree with that.
Because of the technical aspects of it. And in this case, this stretch of river is particularly interesting because it exhibits all of those parts and pieces of the puzzle that we so enjoy, at least the three of us, and I presume many of your audience.
Yeah, I think the big part of it is, and Matt and I have talked about this before, is, you know, us in the Midwest and fishing the Driftless area, we've got these smaller streams. So it's easier to look and dissect these, you know, the channels and the riffles and the tail offs and all of that. Right. So you can take all of this once you get into something bigger like the Madison or the Yellowstone or the Bighorn and stop looking at the 80-foot wide river and narrow it down to what you would consider the Rush, and look at that piece of stream and say, okay, where am I going to fish? Okay, it didn't work there. Move over a section and then move over a section and then move over a section. Like, you know, learning here will teach you all the big Western rivers or smaller rivers. Like you get down southeastern Minnesota, anything like that. If you can learn the structure here, you can fish anywhere.
Yeah.
Amen.
You know, I think one of the biggest things I ever learned from Matt was when him and I first started fishing together, we took a fishing trip out west with, it was the Bob Mitchell's crew, that trout tested journey we went. And that was like maybe second or third time Matt and I ever fished together. We're fishing the Bighorn and we're with my buddy Area Man, and him, Area Man and I just hop in the river like 6 feet off the bank, just like immediately like that. And Matt's standing on the bank like, what are you guys doing? We're like, well, we're going to the main channel. And Matt's like, you just stepped where all the fish are.
Yeah.
You know, fishing a piece of water like this, it teaches you stay on the bank, fish that first section and work your way out instead of just immediately going out to where you think the fish are. You know, we were talking as we're walking up river today. You're like, I used to walk up here and fish would just scatter from the bank. They're always there. Like, and these smaller rivers teach you that to work your way in to out.
Yep. Yeah. I have to add actually this maybe to some of your audience. You know, we just opened this January, to be clear. And we've been doing classes prior to the building being constructed. And now that the building is operational, we've had, 50 students, let's say, have gone through this program so far. And I'm amazed at when we forcibly section off the river what Matt was doing earlier today and what you commented on, when you section off the river and you kind of concentrate on what are the basics in those areas, again, using a golf analogy of kind of stay with the hole, how magical things start to become because you take stock in what's going on. And so, for instance, whether it's an eagle in the sky or the blue sky you mentioned earlier at the opening of the program, or the structure in the river, right, or the trees overhanging, you start to pay attention. And I've even had, sounds a little bit corny, but I've even had students start to kind of well up and recognize that for the first time in their life, they are actually stepping back from all of the busyness.
Yeah.
Right. So in some odd way, again, to Matt's credit, just kind of stop and take stock and section off the river is a forced behavior of sorts to have students in our curriculum also take stock in what's going on and maybe broader context to that, which is maybe a whole separate session, right?
Right.
For another time, right?
Yeah, I mean, some of the best days of fishing, you know, the fish is the farthest thing down on the list of things that happened today.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that you're out in nature, you're standing in a river, the sun is shining. In today's case, the wind was blowing.
let's not say that. Scratch that.
But the roosters are cackling.
The sun felt warm. You look overhead. There's two eagles circling around. You're hearing the water rushing past. You know, you're touching the earth, and yeah, and we're catching fish.
Yeah, nothing sucks about that.
No.
Yeah.
No. And even if you don't catch fish, it's still a good day. You know.
Yeah.
Turn that cell phone off.
Well, and that brings me to maybe another point is that I have been approached by lots of people that are thinking about starting their fly fishing career or their resume. And they'll ask, you know, well, what kind of fish should I expect to catch? And my answer is zero.
Yeah. Yeah. Start at zero.
Right. Just start at zero because catching a fish is, you know, somewhere north of luck and south of a blessing.
Yeah. Yep.
And to expect that you're going to do that every single time is at best a fool's errand. So fishing is not catching, but when you do catch, that's a great thing. But I guess the point of this is that particularly for beginners, when you step into anything new, I want to make sure that we and the collective we at this table now, but also the broader we are setting an expectation of sorts around what is it. And it's an experience unlike any when it comes to kind of absorbing all of the context of the river and the nature and you know, the coffees that lead up to it and maybe the beers that follow and or during and,
yep.
And so forth.
The stories and the camaraderie and, you know, fly fishing for us anyways is so much more than catching fish.
Yeah. And Mark, you might notice that when Matt and I fish together, we don't fish two at a time. Because that's just the way that we fish. We just enjoy.
I did notice that. Yeah.
It's not typically normal as far as a lot of the people that we fish with, because we just enjoy. I enjoy watching Matt catch a fish. And I enjoy forgetting to net a fish for a ball, looking at rocks in the Yellowstone Park.
We argue as to whose turn it is to fish.
Yeah. You know, over the last 7-8 years, you know, the first 2 years for me for fly fishing was all about, can I catch a fish when I go out fishing? Well, I figured that out. Like, pretty confident I can catch a fish. After that, I want the camaraderie. I want the joy of watching a buddy catch a fish. The brown trout and bridge beers. Or, you know, I want to fish with somebody I've never fished with before, and I want to see you catch a fish. Yeah. You know, that's the bigger part of what we're doing now. And that's what brings me most joy about everything about fly fishing is the camaraderie. Hey, I can give you a fly and you can catch a fish on it. It's less about, I caught 38 fish today. Like, yeah, that's a good day, but I'd rather just hang out and have a couple hams and, you know,
watch the eagle soar over.
Yeah.
Well, I think, again, back to the genesis of the school and genesis of kind of our thinking and as far as our my wife and I in terms of building this business around an adventure-based experience, at least millennials for sure, and probably Gen Y, maybe Gen Z, are looking to broaden how they see the world. And I'm being a bit philosophical here, but there's kind of the old saying of do things own you or do you own things? Mm-hmm. Right. And the real answer is that there's a lot of us are looking for more experiences than things. And to that end, we feel that in a some odd way, the Margo and Lola School is around the evangelization of experience. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if it's fly fishing, although we think fly fishing is pretty damn
pretty
cool.
Good. Yep.
And
pretty
good. If you need to strike DM, we can do that.
But no, we're an explicit podcast, Mark. Okay, it's good. Fine.
Then I'll spare you the other words. But we think that that's as an important of a thing as any, because we've had people say, you know, that was fun, but we're not interested. Right. Okay. To which my answer is great. You tried it.
Glad you tried it. Right?
Yeah. If you're outdoors, Matt, to your point, if you're outdoors, that's a big fat amen. Mm-hmm. Try something else.
Yeah. I mean, I just know from my own personal life, like when I start getting down and stressed out, just like going outside makes all that go away. And fly fishing is my way of going outside. And, you know, there's a lot of power in, you know, reaching out and touching a tree, you know, and having your feet on the dirt. You know, and like I just said, you know, fly fishing is how I do that. Some people, my wife, she really likes to hike. I don't get anything out of going for a walk out in the woods with like no end point other than looping around and coming like, back.
Are we hiking to a fishing spot?
Yeah. Okay. I'm good with that.
Because Ashley does the same thing. Like, let's go hiking. I'm like, are we hiking to go, like, is there a lake or a river somewhere?
Yeah.
Like, I'm on the same point, like, but everybody has their own.
Right. Their own way to connect with nature. And like you said, Mark, people who are curious about fly fishing or connecting with nature or what have you, if they come out and they go through the class and it's not their thing, good. Maybe it pushed them towards something else. That's their way of
maybe they picked up birding, photography. You know, we were talking about earlier about the prairie grasses and the prairie flowers that you guys have out there. Mm-hmm. My wife would go insane about that stuff as soon as it comes and starts blooming. You said you've got a schedule of the different colors and things that come out. So,
right.
I mean, that's a big part of it too. Is yeah, there's fly fishing, but this section down here. Even now, I mean, there's no snow, so that's great.
Well, it's March. Yeah.
But like bring springtime when these prairie grasses and the prairie flowers start to bloom. It is serene. It is gorgeous. There will be bugs and
when the flocks come out, it's amazing.
And we saw what those swans that flew overhead of us today. I'm not a swan guy. I don't know which kind of swans those were. They're honking at us. Matt and I have gotten scared off the river numerous times down here by beavers. I mean, there's
Sasquatches.
Well, the Sasquatch is a little further up.
That's only a rumor I'm told. Yeah. But yeah,
Sasquatch, black bear. I'm not really sure which one it was.
Yeah. Again, as a bit of a promotional editorial, we were very fortunate after we bought the property, not before, but after we bought the property, we recognized that the prior owners had, invested in this 5 acres of wildflower meadow. And again, for your audience who's maybe, you know, on the edge of trying fly fishing, but not really sure, to your point, we've got a very nice trail system that's managed, that's agreeable to any capability. You don't have to be a hiker or a mountain climber. You can just get out of the car and walk if you can do that. But to appreciate the variety of things that this region offers. And as we talked about earlier, the broader region of the Driftless area has got a lot of geological interest points. And you don't need to drive too far. In fact, we're 10 miles north of the what's called the Rush Miss Delta, which feeds into Lake Pepin. Mm-hmm. And then there's 40 miles north of us, which is more Rush River. But if you were to drive any stretch of that in other areas, you would notice that the driftless term relates to a lot of geological wonder. And right. So that's kind of a cool thing that we have, notwithstanding some of the more basic things, like we talked about the meadow and some other amenities that we're not too far from. We're just down the road from a place called Vino in the Valley. And who knew that there would be a vineyard right next door when we bought this right. property?
With amazing pizza.
Yep. So you take the afternoon class with your significant other.
Yes.
And then you've got a built-in date night just down the road.
So I've got a feeling there's a few of you listening that have probably anniversaries coming up between May and September. And you're like, I would really like to fish, but I know that I should probably spend time with my significant other.
Good idea.
Here is your option. You can go online to the Margo and Lola website, buy a gift card, take a class, and then head, is it a mile?
Not even that. Probably 500 yards.
500 yards down the road, get a nice bottle of wine, a wood-fired pizza, and sit out and look at the Rush River, enjoy a nice wine pizza evening with your significant other while you fished that day.
Mega bonus points.
Yeah, you say that it's almost storybook. it actually is.
It's unreal. Say that. Yeah. It's absolutely unreal. That honestly, that is how I've convinced Ash to come out here numerous times. So I was like, well, we can go fish and then we can go get a glass of wine at Vino and you can hang out. And and I'm still going to be like, I wish I was fishing, but I was fishing and I'm still looking where my fish are.
It just so gives, you, know, it gives you privileges to do more of the same.
Right? Yeah.
Under the cloak of something else.
Yeah. So that will guarantee you fishing trips in the future.
Yeah. It's just a great spot to be. You know, like we mentioned, it's so close to the cities. It's an easy drive. And let's just promote the Ellsworth Creamery while we're at it, because you can stop and get fresh cheese curds.
We've been snacking on cheese curds all day.
All day. Cheese curds, squeaky cheese curds.
Yeah, my girlish figure has been totally lost as a result of
it's the cheese curds
showing up. Yeah.
So, Margo and Lola, how'd you come up with the name?
That's a good question. So,
because I know one half of it's been running around looking for those cheese curds. Yeah,
that would be the Lola, and then the Margo is the other dog. So, again, for the audience, we have decided that we'd just keep it in the family, so to speak. Lola is our Weimaraner, who is a puppy and full of energy, and our Wheaton Terrier, who is Margo. Is more seasoned and chill. So if you put chill and energetic together, that's somewhere in the middle. And hence what we hope to be is a business for our guests. And, you know, there's a lot of energy that goes into fly fishing. As much as we've talked about kind of the kind of mindset of what it is a physical thing. And just to kind of step back a quick second, I've been reading a lot more about how yoga or fly fishing, I should say, is the new yoga. And there's a great deal of comments around that that folks can read about. But so that's the energetic side of Lola. And then the Margo side of it is, of course, the just kind of taking stock in life and chilling out. So we decided on that. And it was available as a website. So what the heck?
That's always a plus. Right?
Yeah, that's a big plus.
So what was the, like, how do you decide one day that, hey, let's open a fly fishing school for beginners? Like, I don't know how involved you want to get, but like where was the spark that, like, one day you and your wife were sitting around going, hey, this is a good idea.
Yeah, I'm going to get in trouble by telling you the real truth here, but let's go for it. You know, having been dropped as a child and done drugs in college and been in jail for a few nights in my life, there was probably some catalyst in any one of those. And at least two of those are correct, by the way. You know,
I think you got to come take a class to figure out which two.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's that would be a good hook.
Yeah.
Forgive the pun. You know, I think it's just been in my DNA, to be honest. Both my wife's and I, she has been, as I have been, world travelers. We've enjoyed seeing different things and learning a lot about stuff that we have no clue about. Mm-hmm. And we've especially appreciated that through the lens of people that have the patience and kind of knowledge to help us to sort through that. Whether it's an international thing or whether that's a regional thing, it doesn't matter. But so that's always been on our mind. And I am inspired by wind in my face. If there's any drug that I would take, that's the drug.
We had that today. So
yeah, we got plenty of that. More drug than we needed. With those two things in mind, it was a low bar to decide that that's what we wanted to do. And we, again, back to the point that we talked, I think, earlier, we were fortunate to find the property. This is awesome property. This is an awesome location. We were fortunate to find builders that were available during this COVID cloud that we've all kind of muscled through. And here we stand.
So, Mark, I want to take a class. I'm new to fly fishing. How do I do it? Where do I find you?
Well, you're just 2 feet away from me, so you can just ask.
All right, hey, Mark. Well, you're going to want to take a reservation probably like with some paper trail behind it, you know.
Jokes aside. So margolola.com, margolola.com. Is where you go. You can see what we have to offer. Again, we have private classes for groups that want to kind of keep it tight. And those would be typically around like family members, friends, or our organizations. And then we have also a public offering whereby it doesn't matter who shows up, might be just yourself or might be a group of people you don't know. But if you go into Margo Lola, margolola.com. You'll see that we have a reservation site and then you can sign up and it works just like any other reservation site, whether it's something you're familiar with, like a dinner reservation or golf course reservation. And then if you're interested in a particular instructor, we're happy to accommodate that. And if you're not, then it'd be luck of the draw, but everybody's well qualified. And very anxious to get out with new students. And as I maybe mentioned or alluded to, we do have occasionally those students that want to learn more, do more. And so we can put those together with different instructors that have specific areas of capability. So, for instance, Josh Baser is one of our instructors, and he's very adept at spey casting. And for new fly fisher people, they probably don't know what that is. But for those that have taken some either classes or have been fly fishing before, they may want to learn about spey casting.
Right.
Or distance casting from, say, Marlene Huston, who's an expert in that, et cetera. So we can get very specific, and we're happy to do that. But in the registration of it, it starts with our website.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll post a link in the show notes and we'll put it in our Linktree, you know, profile on Instagram. So you guys can find that. I do have a question though, like kind of wrap it all back around. What Mark to you, what excites you the most about what's happening right now at your event space?
Well, I think I don't know if it's a resurgence in fly fishing, but I think it's a moment in the industry that we are going to be a part of. And that is a moment where the industry could do maybe a better job at allowing beginners to try things out. And there's been a lot of conversation by large manufacturers, I think probably retailers to some degree, and many guides that I've spoken to around, gee, wouldn't it be great if we could get more people involved? And this goes a little bit against the grain of people that, like ourselves, have been fly fishing for, you know, years and years, right? So what excites me about it is the opportunity to invite openly the chance for new entrants to the category of fly fishing to try it out. I've been a lifelong educator. I pride myself in inviting people to kind of rise to the occasion, pardon the pun for those of you who are fly fisher persons, but to rise to that occasion and to get outside and get some fresh air. And that gets me excited.
Good. It's good to hear. Well, like I said, we're going to post a lot of the links and stuff in the show notes. Mark, thank you again for having us out today.
So my pleasure, guys.
We had an absolute blast fishing the stretch of river. And again, to our listeners, you're looking to learn more. Maybe you listen to the podcast. You've never actually fly fished before. This is a spot to go because it is on one of our favorite stretches of river. And,
right,
you know, let's say you work in the corporate environment and your director's like, we're looking for a new team building experience.
Yeah, come here.
This is a great spot to do that because I know I'm going back to my director on Monday and saying, no more axe throwing, no more Top Golf. Let's bring everybody out to Margo Lola and let's go fly fishing. So, Mark, thank you again for the hospitality.
Thanks, Mark.
Beautiful spot. It's been a pleasure fishing with you and meeting you again. And
Lola.
And Lola.
She's been a great host.
And look forward to fishing again in the future.
Thank you both. And thank you, audience, for listening to this session.
All right. Well, everybody, we'll catch you on the next episode of Brown Trout Bridge Beers because we don't do Zooms anymore.
No, we're going live.
Going live from here on out. So thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.